Can you help keep Bob Enyart on the air for another year? I know you can do it. Every subscription, we're giving away Bob's brand new video on the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Folks, I know you get a lot out of Bob Enyart Live, and it's time to pay a little bit forward. Help keep Bob Enyart Live on the air. Call us up or go to kgov.com, subscribe to one of Bob's monthly teaching series, or just make a donation, $5, $10, $5,000, $10,000. It's the Bob Enyart Telethon. We need your help to keep on the air. God bless you.
Off the iPad.
Not again.
Rocks, millions of years old.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to another episode of Real Science Friday. I'm Bob Enyart.
And I'm Fred Williams, software engineer and creation speaker. Fred, and those, caveman engineer.
Those rocks cannot be millions of years old because our website is really climbing on the Google rankings.
Yeah, youngearth.com. It was launched 2 months ago.
Yeah.
And it really is climbing. In fact, you linked to my Evolution Fairy Tale forum.
Yes.
And it's jumped by 15% since you did that. Now, I really think that our forum jumped and then we're the ones who made yours jump.
Yeah,
okay, maybe not.
I see. So, Fred, youngearth.com, we have a lot of evidence that the Earth is young. But what a great issue of Answers Magazine from Ken Ham.
Yeah, the cover story, 10 best evidences from science that confirm a young Earth. That's on the cover. I can't wait to go through these.
Yeah, and some of these are on our website, but some are not, and we need to add one or two of them to our website. So here's the list. The sediments on the sea floor, there's not enough. Bent rock layers that are gently curved rock layers. How does that happen? Soft tissue in fossils.
Never heard that one before.
Including dinosaur fossils. The faint sun paradox. If the sun is billions of years old, it would have been a lot cooler. Earth would have froze. The rapidly decaying magnetic field on Earth. That's a huge problem for evolutionists. All the helium in radioactive rocks.
Yeah, that's one of my favorites.
Isn't that a great one? And then there's carbon-14 in fossils, coal, even in diamonds. And the comets that cannot last for tens or hundreds of millions of years.
Yep.
Short-lived comets. Very little salt in the sea. And also DNA in allegedly ancient bacteria, like hundreds of millions of year old DNA that's in the bacteria living today.
Yeah, that's pretty darn close to today's bacteria. Can't wait to get to all of those.
Yeah, so let's begin. The very first one is the amount of sediment on the ocean floor.
That's right. So every year, with erosion we have from the continents, mm-hmm. it should put about 20 billion tons of dirt and rock into the ocean.
20 billion tons. Now, that's a lot. I just did a quick calculation, Fred, real quick. And I figure that means 20 quintillion tons in 1 billion years, just 1 billion.
In 1 billion, you get
20 quintillion tons, and that's 1 billion. The evolutionists think the oceans were there for 3 billion years. That'd be 60 quintillion tons. And Fred, they say with plate tectonics, which there's overwhelming evidence against plate tectonics, but they say that that removes about 5%. Of the sediments going into the oceans.
Yeah, and I had asked you before the show what, you know, because you're an expert on Walt Brown's hydroplate theory, which is a theory I ascribe to, but I'm not as knowledgeable as you are.
Well, only because I read the book three times now because I'm addicted to it.
Yeah.
But
anyways, so I was wondering, well, hey, how does Walt Brown deal with the fact that they're claiming that plate tectonics does remove 5% or what, roughly a billion a year?
Well, Answers in Genesis and the non-Walt Brown part of the creation movement, they believe in what they call catastrophic plate tectonics. Now, Walt, I think, completely demolishes the claim for plate tectonics. But even Answers in Genesis here in their article, they say even though if we allow for 5% of the sediments coming off the continents to be removed, like it's being subducted into the mantle, mm-hmm. even if we allowed for that, it still doesn't solve the problem. At all.
Yeah.
Nowhere near it. But they write that there is actually no evidence that there's sediment being subducted and mixed into the mantle. So it's a story that geologists love to tell stories.
Yeah, they love to tell stories. And, you know, I underline that. No evidence exists of much sediment being subducted and mixed into the mantle. The answer is right there for me. So Answers in Genesis, even their position they're pretty much making an assumption that even this 5% happens.
Right.
Yet there's no evidence that any
right.
of it happens.
So the 1,300 feet that we do have on the ocean floor, sea floor, all over the world, if you smoothed it out and averaged the sediment, it's 1,300 feet, like a quarter of a mile thick. Well, at the current rate of erosion, you would reach that in 12 million years.
This not billions, means, not billions, but not just billions. 12 million. It puts a limit.
This means there are billions of years of missing sediment on the ocean floor. And Fred, virtually every one of these 10 examples we're going to give are huge observations. They're not little observations. They're observations throughout the world, throughout the oceans, throughout the solar system, huge, huge observations.
So billions of tons of sedimentary rock that is missing. Billions of tons.
Billions.
They're missing.
Right. And so for each of these, the atheist and evolutionist, they have a rescue device. And in this case, they say, well, the sediments must have been eroding at a much slower rate in the past. And for one, that's just not intuitive at all.
No.
Because for 3 billion years, the continents would have been eroding into the oceans.
Mm-hmm.
But not only that, when we study the deposits in the oceans, there is overwhelming evidence of rapid deposition, far more rapid than today.
Yeah, and that's what the evidence shows. And yet they want to monkey with the assumption of how rapidly it,
right.
the rate is.
And let me give you an example. A lot of the sediments are massive undersea landslides with huge turbidity flow values. Now, that's how rapid is the water flowing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've seen the video, Fred, of laboratories where they do flume studies, where they show as you speed up the flow rate of the water, you dramatically increase how many sediments could be carried. And this blew my mind. I had to see it with my own eyes. They can deposit multiple horizontal layers of strata simultaneously. I used to think, let's say there were 8 layers in 3 inches,
okay.
right? I used to think that those 8 layers had to be laid down one after another.
So sequentially.
Right. First the bottom, then the second, then the third. You see with your own eyes all 8 layers being laid down simultaneously.
Wow.
Because the front edge of a rapid flow, it's sorting out all the sediments into their proper size and specific gravity and all, and it's laying them all down simultaneously.
That's amazing.
It's like it's make-believe animation, but it's real. So one experiment throws out 1,000 stories.
Yeah.
It's rapid deposition in the past, not slower deposition. So that's the first piece of evidence.
Okay. So what about bent rock layers? I really like this one. You know, when rock gets hard, Bob, isn't it pretty brittle?
Right. That's the thing about rock.
What happens if you try to break cement? I mean,
if you take a slab of rock and you say you just want to bend it, you want to bend it around the edge of your fireplace. Like you can do with wood if you're a professional carpenter.
Yeah.
Right? But when you have stone, stone doesn't bend gently.
Yeah.
It breaks.
It breaks.
It fractures.
It breaks in two. It fractures.
Right.
Absolutely.
And so what do we find all over the world, and it's so evident at the Grand Canyon, is sometimes hundreds, sometimes thousands of feet of sandstone that is just very gently molded and curved. As much as 90-degree angles.
Yeah, and to try to give you a picture of this, there's a picture in the magazine, but you see things bending down like a cup or a sine wave coming up. And so this is like a, I don't want to say zigzag, but kind of like a sine wave.
Yeah.
And there's no fractures or breaks. It's smooth. Yet they believe that this stuff was laid down over millions of years,
millions?
One of these layers, and then a layer on top of it somehow bends that. No, it's going to crack it and break it.
And there's a whole bunch of layers that are all curved together gently, nice and smooth. And Fred, what's interesting about this layer, this sandstone layer, is that it covers most of the continental U.S. This one layer. It's called the peat sandstone at the base of the Grand Canyon.
Most of the United States, there's a picture here in the magazine that is an overlay on the United States.
It goes into Canada, Nova Scotia, and it goes to North Africa and into Israel. So this is a massive strata of sandstone. And what is so cool about it is that it is this one layer, just like there are these mega sequences all around the world. Well, this is one of those. And Fred, for part of it to be bent, that tells us that it all was laid down rapidly. It's not like the part of the Grand Canyon where we could see it, was mm-hmm. laid down rapidly and all the other parts was laid down over millions of years, that doesn't work.
Yeah, so there wasn't a local flood just in the Grand Canyon. Right.
The geologists agree that this whole thing covering much of the U.S. was laid down at the same time, although they think it was over millions of years, like 80 million years or something.
And again, these things are shaped. They're formed in like an S-curve, and they would be cracked and bent if these were laid down over millions of years. So I'm excited to hear, Bob, how do they rescue this one? How do the old earthers get out of this
problem? All right, their rescue device, and let me first remind people, if you take Geology 101, you learn that there are three kinds of rocks, right?
Okay.
There is igneous rock and sedimentary rock and metamorphic rock. I remember that.
Cool.
I never took Geology 101. But I remember indigenous people dig igneous rock. We actually made that up a while ago in order to remember that. Indigenous people dig igneous rock. Igneous rock is like when you have magma and it cools and you get granite or basalt. That's like your basic rock. Then there's sedimentary rock, like from a flood, which is a mile deep all over the world on the continents. Then you have metamorphic rock. That's like sedimentary rock, like sandstone. Under heat and pressure, it changes into a different kind of rock, like, say, quartz or marble or some other metamorphic rock.
Yeah.
So this rock is not metamorphic rock. It's still sandstone.
It's still sandstone.
Exactly.
And yet they say that one of their rescue devices is that heat and pressure is what allowed these rocks to bend.
It softened the rock so much so
it could bend.
After tens of millions of years, it just so beautifully deformed.
Okay, so if heat and pressure softened the rocks, then wouldn't it have turned it into some other kind of rock? No, these are still sandstone.
It's still sandstone. So the third item, Fred, out of the 10, is soft tissue in dinosaur bones.
What's that? I never heard of that.
DinosaurSoftTissue.com is another one of our websites. It's a single page. And it is climbing. It's now on
climbing
the first
the charts.
Page. We recently beat National Geographic. This is exciting. We're heading up to number one for dinosaur soft tissue Google searches.
You'd make Casey Kasem really proud.
For climbing the charts. And so, Fred, here in Answers Magazine, Ken Ham's ministry, Answers in Genesis, they point out that they're now finding blood vessels like you find not only in marrow, but also in bone itself, these tiny, tiny blood vessels. But they don't only find the blood vessels. They're finding the lining of the blood vessels, which is made of endothelial cells. And they're finding red blood cells with nuclei, the kind that are in reptiles and birds. That's what they're finding in dinosaur bones.
But wait, don't they say that, you know, bacteria can contaminated it? And so that's really what we're looking at is
that
bacteria.
That was the hope from about 5 years ago. Yep. So many papers have disproved that. Fred, for one reason, they have now sequenced collagen protein.
Oh, wait a minute. Doesn't bacteria have collagen?
No.
Oh, okay.
Collagen is one of those structural proteins you and I talked about recently where they help give the body its shape, like in cartilage and
all the connective tissue.
Connective tissue.
So wait a minute. So bacteria does not have it.
It doesn't
have it. So finding collagen, doesn't that put a pretty serious dent into this argument that it's bacteria that contaminated this?
Big time.
That's been refuted.
Right. And collagen is a very unique, easy to identify kind of protein. So those examples, along with many others, like they've done immunological studies, they inject the stuff into lab rats, and the lab rats produce antibodies that they would for reptile hemoglobin.
Wow.
So there's so much fabulous evidence that this stuff, and it's transparent, and it's stretchy, it's elastic.
It's elastic, yes.
And as Lawrence Krauss said, of course it would survive for 65 million years. Of course it would. Why wouldn't it? But we have evidence from mummies that when they've studied mummies, they have found these kinds of discoveries of cells and proteins and fragments. And so the young earth creationists, when we look at Egyptian mummies and we look at that Iceman, remember?
Yeah, the Iceman they found that they think is about 5,000 years old.
Right, pretty close. When they do that, they look and they find the incredible preservation of this microscopic detail. So we know from a young earth perspective that these kinds of cell structures can survive for thousands of years. but the evidence is overwhelming that they're not going to survive for millions, because we see the degradation in the Iceman and in the Egyptian mummies.
Yeah, it takes an incredible amount of faith to think that this stuff can survive millions of years. So, yeah. Bob, do we got a Jurassic Park coming up that's going to be real? We can go see real dinosaurs?
Well, so far, no DNA from dinosaurs, but they're working on it, Fred. Okay, how about number four, the faint young sun paradox? This part of the article was written by astronomer Danny Faulkner, who we interviewed on Real Science Friday just this summer. This is a great one because the sun is powered by nuclear fusion.
Yeah, so they think hydrogen changing into helium is what powers the sun, right?
Yeah, and there's strong evidence for that. We've detected the neutrinos that produces. And so that changes the composition of the sun's core. And so this is basic physics, physics 101. Over time, the temperature of the sun has increased about 25%, allegedly, from 3 billion years ago.
Okay, so then, based on your logic, then 3 billion years ago, it would be 25% cooler?
Cooler.
What would the temperature be?
Yeah, 20% cooler. The Earth would be below freezing, the entire Earth. And because of that, the oceans would be frozen. And Fred, geologists, the evolutionary geologists, nowhere have they ever documented or provided evidence or even claimed that the oceans were once frozen. So that's really powerful for us young Earth creationists, because if the sun was forming gradually, then the Earth would have been a frozen ball of ice. And once it freezes solid, then it reflects the sun's energy back out into space, because it's the deep blue oceans. Blue absorbs light energy, and the continents are brown and green. They absorb energy. But if it's all ice, which tends to be white, it reflects out into space, and the Earth would never thaw.
Yeah. So reading this, it's called the faint sun paradox. That isn't our title. That's what the evolutionists call it. They're the ones calling it a paradox.
Yeah, and they've known about this for decades. So, Fred, we cover this and some of these others at youngearth.com, but here's what the evolutionists do. They say, well, the atmosphere of the Earth changed over tens of millions, hundreds of millions of years, precisely to keep the Earth warm, but without overheating the Earth. So it has to be a precisely fine-tuned change in the Earth's atmosphere based on factors that have nothing to do with the sun.
Yeah, so somehow they have to map this to the sun becoming brighter over millions of years. It doesn't make sense.
It's adjusted.
What are the odds of it just... Right. Somehow magically.
Beautifully.
There's no way that they would know of each other to connect.
Right.
To work in unison.
And just like all the other fine-tuned parameters.
This is convergent astronomy.
Convergent astronomy. That's good, Fred. Convergent astronomy. This is the anthropic principle of the young sun, Earth, atmosphere, perfectly dancing together syndrome.
Sounds like a public grade school principle.
That kind of principle. Okay. So, Fred, let's go to the next. I love this. The Earth's rapidly decaying magnetic field. It turns out that without a magnetic field, life could not exist on Earth because of the dangerous rays of the sun.
That's right.
So we've been measuring the strength of the Earth's magnetic field very carefully now for decades. And the first measurements go back to 1845. And the Earth's magnetic field has been decaying 5% per century based on all of these measurements.
Yeah, and more sophisticated measurements, the last three decades, it's gone down by 1.4%.
1.4% just in the last 30 years.
Yeah, so if we extrapolate that back, how old can the Earth possibly be?
The Earth cannot be more than 20,000 years old, because if it were, then the temperature of the Earth would have evaporated all the oceans.
So would this be a case of missing billions of years of rapid magnetic decay?
We're missing billions of years of rapid magnetic decay. And so, of course, the atheists have rescue devices for everything. And again, none of these rescue devices are predicted by them. They're all shocked by the data, and they come up with wild rescue devices.
That are almost always not scientific. They don't fit the physics.
Right. In this case, Fred, some of them, and we see this with dinosaur soft tissue and carbon-14, some of them say that the magnetic field decay is slow. It's not exponential like it is.
Yeah, they say it's linear, right?
And so they simply deny, even though now there are worldwide measurements being taken and published every 5 years by the International Geomagnetic Reference Field Project.
So they want us to trust data that we're not seeing. It's not what we're observing.
Right.
Just take it for granted.
Right.
And that's how they explain these problems.
In fact, you know that the magnetic field of Mercury, let me throw this in real quick. Back in 1975, NASA sent Mariner 10, and they were shocked because Mercury is so small, it should have no magnetic field left. And they measured a magnetic field. They were really shocked. Well, then in 2008, NASA measures the field again, and they find out that it decreased in strength by a few percent. That blew their minds.
Let me guess, it was exponential and not linear.
Exponential. Now, in 2011, MESSENGER flew by, and it revealed a whopping almost 8% decrease since 1975.
Wow.
8%. And so it utterly shocks the atheist evolutionists because they think Mercury was there for billions of years, and so it should have no magnetic fields.
Well, they get shocked a lot. Don't they use treatment for lobotomies and
yeah,
stuff like
that's
that?
Right. Yeah, reading basic science is shock treatment.
Yes. Remember Dr. Russell Humphrey's prediction of the field strength of...
That's right, of various planets, which he nailed right on.
Right on, and he made those predictions before the Voyager went past those planets,
exactly.
And then when they got the measurements came in, they matched his prediction. They didn't match.
Totally
the
contradicted
secular.
The NASA
And that's how
type.
Science is supposed to work.
Yeah, by predictions. So also, another rescue device is they say... Well, there's a dynamo model that somehow it's actually increasing parts of the magnetic field and it's causing it to be steady. But if that were true, we shouldn't see it decaying so rapidly in just the last 150 years.
And again, it doesn't fit basic physics.
Right. Contradicts basic physics, their dynamo model. Okay. Number six, here's another great one. Helium in crystals. And in rocks that have a lot of uranium.
Yeah, I really like this one. So helium is a noble gas, and it's real slippery. It doesn't attach to other atoms. And
did it sit with the Knights of the Round Table?
Did it sit with the Knights of the Round Table?
Oh, it's noble.
Oh, I was trying to think of something
what
slippery.
What in the world? Yeah. Noble means it doesn't
okay,
mix.
Bob, I'd keep the radio day job.
A noble gas, so it doesn't mix with other elements. And it's the second lightest element after hydrogen.
Yes.
So what that means is it readily diffuses. The most basic laws of physics include that gases diffuse from a greater concentration to lesser.
So you mean it leaks, right?
It leaks. So when you have helium in crystals, it'll leak out.
Very leaky.
Eventually it'll go into the atmosphere, leaking out of the crust of the Earth. Eventually it goes into outer space, but very slowly.
Yeah.
Very slowly.
And I really liked that there's a group of scientists from the RATE project, and Russell Humphreys led that group, and they made a prediction of how rapid the helium would diffuse out of the zircon crystals based on temperature.
Right.
They made a prediction, and they documented it in a magazine.
They published it, and with the prediction of the old Earth geologist.
If the rock was 1.5 billion years old, they charted how rapidly it would diffuse.
And if it's 6,000 years old, they charted.
They had another chart.
And who was right?
Well, about 5 years later, they sent some rocks to an independent lab.
Zircon crystals.
The zircon crystals. And the lab results came back, and the line fell almost perfectly on the 6,000-year line.
Almost perfectly. And, Fred, this is great evidence. These crystals came from hundreds of feet below the surface in New Mexico, where the rock was almost 400 degrees. And they contained way more helium than old earthers would expect. And it turns out that as uranium decays, it does produce helium.
Mm-hmm.
Well, more than half of all of the helium that this uranium would have produced in over a billion years was still in the zircon crystals, still in. So the rescue device, you know what they're saying?
Well, one of them was that there's a force field on the outside of the zircon crystal.
Right.
Keeps it from going
That's
out.
One of them, except the zircon crystals are all like sliced horizontally with mica between them. So there is no boundary
force field.
Blocking. Right.
Yeah.
The other rescue device was that the helium was flowing into the crystals.
Yeah.
So that puts everything backwards because the surrounding material has a lower helium content than the crystals.
Yeah, so it makes absolutely no sense.
No, and so this is a billion years worth of missing helium diffusion.
Yeah, I think it's even more than that, like 3 billion years worth, right? They say that there should only be 100,000 years worth.
Right, exactly. And another way of saying it, there's like billions of years too much helium in these crystals. Okay, number seven, we got to speed up, is carbon-14 in fossils, in coal, in diamonds, and that stuff decays in only thousands of years. Fred, if the whole Earth were a ball of carbon-14, it would all be gone after only a million years. Mm-hmm. And yet they find it everywhere, even in diamonds that are supposed to be 3 billion years old.
Yeah, a huge problem. We've talked about this quite a bit.
Yeah, and the rescue device is that old hackneyed, oh, it's contamination or neutron capture. You're not going to contaminate inside a diamond.
Yeah, you're not. And the labs are very careful on this. The secular right. labs that look at this.
They test the equipment with zero radiocarbon specimens, and they get zero radiocarbon.
Yeah.
So it's very high tech, and the evidence is overwhelming. Then there's short-lived comets, number 8. Fred, comets can't last tens or hundreds of millions of years.
Yeah, they orbit around the sun, right?
Right.
And every time they go around the sun, they lose part of their mass.
Yes.
And plus, sometimes they hit a planet, like which one was
Shoemaker,
it?
Shoemaker-Levy 9.
That's right.
Plunged into Jupiter, and one of the discoverers, David Levy, said that our friend, young Earth creationist, telescope inventor and manufacturer, Jim Burr, David Levy said he came up with the best improvement to the telescope since Galileo. And he
wow,
really did.
That's
binocular
cool.
telescope. So, Fred, the comets, they say, well, you know, maybe the Kuiper Belt and the Oort cloud. Well, astronomers have now found thousands of asteroids orbiting beyond Neptune, but no comets. And they're not going to find comets from these sources because it's not true. Comets came from the Earth, the fountains of the Great
Deep.
Yeah,
I think that's a cool idea.
Yeah, and they're so, dirty snowballs.
Yeah, dirty snowballs, and we're missing millions of comets.
Yeah, that's a good point. Okay, and very little salt in the sea. So much salt, about 450 million tons of salt is deposited into the ocean every year, and only about 120 million tons is removed, about
25%. That's being real conservative.
Very conservative. So you'd reach today's amount of saltiness in the sea in only about 40 million years.
Yeah, so that puts a max limit on how long this could have been, not
yeah.
billions of years.
So there's 3 billion years of missing salt in the oceans. So their rescue device, well, in the past, there had to be less salt. What, less sodium chloride in the continents?
Yeah.
What, less erosion? What, less? I mean, everything contradicts itself.
I think they got that because they found that there's less pepper on the...
That's right. less pepper, less salt.
Yeah.
So, Fred, number 10 is DNA in what they call ancient bacteria.
Yeah, and the DNA looks just like modern bacteria, right?
Yes.
And this is supposed to be 250 million-year-old bacteria, yet it looks like today's bacteria. Where's the evolution of that bacteria over 250 million years?
They say some kind of cow thing turned into a whale in 10 million years. Just in 10 million
yeah.
years.
Yep.
And we went from some kind of chimp to human in 5 million years. You mean 250 million years, this bacteria that was locked into these salt crystals, they didn't evolve, those that were not locked. They're still the same. I mean, come on. And I love how they call it Lazarus bacteria.
Yeah, that's cool.
Because Jesus raised Lazarus from the dead, just like mitochondrial Eve, Y chromosomal
yeah.
Adam.
So they resurrected this bacteria from millions of years ago.
Yeah.
Well, no, maybe it's not that old.
Right, exactly.
They blame it on contamination.
Yeah.
But the scientists, the secular scientists who discovered it said that they were extremely careful in their procedures
mm-hmm.
in extracting this bacteria.
Yeah, right. And that's the way it is. The scientists are so careful. And when the data doesn't support the billions of years, the evolutionists will throw out the data to defend their theory.
That's right, and they'll be shocked.
Thanks, Fred Williams. RealScienceFriday.com, and check out our store to help keep us on the air. This is Bob Inyart inviting you to read our manuscript, The Plot, for an overview of the whole Bible. Call us at 800-836-9278. That's 836-9278.